And good evening. Welcome to another episode of The Weather Junkies. I'm your host, Dakota Smith, in Fort Collins, Colorado. And we're joined by Tyler Jankowski over on the East Coast in Connecticut.
Yes,
Tyler.
good evening. Thank you for joining us on this Thursday evening. It's a summer-like evening here in Connecticut. We have a little bit of haze in the sky. I can see some orange outside there as the sun sets in a couple of minutes, I think. I think it's like 8:12 or 8:13. So nice long days, and I've been enjoying this warmth. It was a
Yeah.
slow rise, but we're finally here. We're finally at the 80s and the 90s, and it looks like it continues into Memorial Day weekend.
That's great to hear. I know you've been craving that warm weather for a while now.
And it
Out
hadn't
here,
been that humid, so that's what's nice about it.
that is good. Out here, I don't know, typical Colorado weather. It's been rainy all day today, but it was sunny earlier in the day. It's probably going to be sunny tomorrow. Kind of in this period where we get some severe storms that initiate out in the plains. Actually went chasing on Tuesday and saw a tornado actually, and it was quite an experience. But besides that, pretty much normal weather out here in Colorado. And our guest tonight is JD Renkin. He right now he works at KOPN Radio in Columbia, Missouri. He's had a few articles published in NOAA, National Weather Service bulletins, and just recently presented at the AMS, presented his research there. JD, how you doing today? And how's the weather where you are?
It's doing really good, actually. We're on the crisp, of the severe storms. I don't know if y'all have been watching, but Kansas City's just been going through a deluge. I guess that's the best way of describing it. They're under a flash flood warning right now, and Kansas City's about 2 hours west of where I am here in central Missouri. And I've actually, y'all talking about the severe weather. I've got some friends of mine that were chasing all day today, and I was even giving them some pointers on where to set up shop and wait for initiation, as a matter of fact. So
I gotcha.
it's really, the mugginess continued into here in central Missouri. Yeah, I would have loved to have 90 degrees with 40% humidity. That would have been awesome.
Yeah.
You guys, that's perfect for summer weather.
It's been quite active out there in Kansas and parts of northern Oklahoma and Texas. And I'm sure there's been some severe weather in Missouri as well. So let's get into the tweets. We'll get back to JD in a second here to get to the main topic tonight, which is long range forecasting using a few teleconnections that JD's been researching. And JD, feel free to chime in on these tweets if you have something to say. Go ahead and go for it. The first
Oh,
tweet
yeah,
tonight, the first tweet tonight is from Brian Kahn. You can follow him at BL Kahn. It says, National parks' biggest threat is climate change. So I'm writing a series about it. I've been to a handful of national parks at this point. I try to get to a few every year, and they're some of the coolest places that exist in America. So I'm really interested into what he's going to write about and some of his visits to these places and what he's going to find in terms of how they can be impacted in the future. Tyler, you ever get out to any of the national parks? I
I don't think
guess
I've been to any.
I bet you've been to one without knowing. No. I
I
try to
can
think of the closest one to you.
New England. I think it's up on the coastline of Maine.
Okay.
Maybe Acadia?
Yeah, I'm not sure actually. I've never
But I
been.
haven't. I don't believe I've been to any.
Oh man, you gotta chip some of those away on your list there.
Pennsylvania when you were at Penn State?
I don't know. I'm going to their website now. I hope they have a. They should have a map. Dakota, you don't.
Or did you just basically not leave the university?
I didn't really leave the island that much, no.
I'm actually not sure if there are any national parks in Pennsylvania. I kind of doubt it. I know there's one in Virginia. That's a Shenandoah.
Yeah, they had a big wildfire there.
Yeah, and then there's Acadia. So I guess Acadia is the closest one to you right now. Anyways, you know, national parks are awesome.
I have a map here. There's a good number in Pennsylvania.
They're probably national forests, not national parks. Which
They list national historic sites on here, but they're not the full-fledged park.
To be fair, most national parks are, you know, in the Rockies or west of the Rockies. So
yeah, let's be fair.
Yeah, let's be fair here. Anyways, really looking forward to this series.
Acadia National Park up in Maine. That might be the closest one to me. So no, I haven't been. There aren't any close to me.
I've been to the Great Smokies.
Oh, very nice.
Beautiful area there, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's a great national park. So I'm curious if he's going to get there. Anyways, let's move on to our second tweet of the night. This tweet's from Devin Boyer. You can follow him at WXDevin. This tweet says, sunsets and tornadoes, or at least the funnel cloud. This has weather deflitch written all over it. And Devin's referring to sunset weather. And it's this crazy funnel of a crazy picture of a funnel at the sunset in the background. And it's safe to say I've never seen anything like that.
Is that the sun in the background?
Yeah. The funnel went right in front of the sun.
I wish it was a photo and not a blurry video.
Well, beggars can't be choosers.
But yeah, it's a neat scene there with the orange and and I guess it's just a funnel cloud, not a tornado.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how accurate a sunset tornado forecast could be.
Not very accurate at all.
Don't think that's even feasible. Tyler, you want to take the next tweet?
Yes. This one is from Matt Coker. He is on Twitter at Storm Coker. His bio says he's an avid storm chaser and he's a student at Iowa State University. And he tweeted, storm chasing is Game of Thrones. Canadians are the Wildlings. North Plains chasers are Night's Watch. And Oklahomans are the Lannisters. I will say right off the bat, I do not watch Game of Thrones. I don't know what this tweet means.
Yeah, neither do I. I'm totally lost.
So,
y'all are
talking.
I'm like,
this must have been a Dakota tweet.
I'll have to take this one here. I thought it was pretty clever, and I think you could have gone.
Knew I watch a show like that.
Yeah, I think you could have gone a little further with this. But I think it's funny, and the tagline. I don't know if you know the tagline of Game of Thrones.
Nope,
is like, winter is coming. The winter is coming. So kind of a weather thing, but if it's chasing season, I think the tagline could be, beware the death heat ridge is coming, because, you know, chasers hate the heat ridge that kind of squashes all severe weather and chasing opportunities. So nice tweet, Matt. Very, and very, very clever.
Our final tweet is from Noah Berggren. I think he watches the show. I don't know if he's an avid watcher or listener, but he tweeted, first of all, he's a Penn State meteorology student who interned at WTAJ News in Altoona, Pennsylvania, recently, last fall. And he tweeted, beware of your crummy weather app forecast for New England on Memorial Day. Extremely difficult forecast with a backdoor front. Now, when did he tweet this? He tweeted this on May 23rd. Which is a couple days ago, because now it's a totally different setup, I think. I think it's a front approaching from the west and potentially some tropical moisture coming up ahead of it. So, yeah, I mean, the forecast has changed all over the place. But, you know, he brings up a topic that we talk about a lot on the show about the changing field of weather communications. And obviously anyone in the know agrees with what he says, but unfortunately I don't know if people understand that there's much of a difference.
Yeah, you know, weather apps, I've kind of wholeheartedly decided that they're not good for high impact events. And they do well in other, you know, is it going to be wet outside? Is it going to be warm outside? But other than that, I don't think they do well at all. Besides, you know, some of the warnings that are issued by NOAA are really good. And if you get those push notifications from an app, that's always good too. But the forecast wise, you know, not very good. So
I've actually got a app that for on my Android where it's a direct link to the NOAA forecast. It's not, you know, the Weather Channel or anything along those lines. It's actually synced with the NOAA. I mean, it basically looks exactly like your NOAA 7-day forecast, and the hourly, it has the hourly setup and also the NOAA's WFO radar also that you can pull for it.
Oh wow. What's the name of that app, do you know?
Hold on real quick.
Yeah, because I'm interested in that. I've yet to really find a nice weather app besides something that gives the forecast, a simple forecast.
One icon, one number, nothing else.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to mention if loyal listener JP Kalb commented, looks to be warm and sunny for the San Jose State University meteorology graduation on Saturday. So that'll be
nice. NOAA weather.
Oh, okay, simple as that. NOAA weather. NOAA weather app.
Yeah, and like I said, it's for the Android. I'm looking up this here. Yeah, through Google Play, and it's like I said, it's really good.
Yeah, well, any listeners, check it out. I'm gonna check it out after the show. Maybe give it a review. But anyways, let's move on to the main topic tonight, and that's why JD's on this show. JD does a lot of work with teleconnections and forecasting in the long range. So JD, I just maybe give a brief overview of what you do now and how you got interested in what you're doing now. Just a little bit of background of yourself.
Oh yeah, sure. No problem. Well, as you know, Tyler being one of the old school moderators with me. Oh yeah. Good times, right? Good things,
yes.
For social media, right, Tyler?
Crazy how it's changed.
Yes, sir. We've been, technically, you still are, super moderators of the AccuWeather.com forums. And, you know, I've been a weather enthusiast for even years before that as a kid and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I grew up in Central Illinois, then moved to Texas, Houston, Texas, came back to Central Illinois. And I got involved in the AccuWeather forums when they were really huge. And not long after I got involved with the forums as a regular member, in fact, I think it was you, Tyler. Tyler requested me to become a super moderator for the Midwest Plains, Ohio Valley region because everybody else was based in the Northeast. And I self-taught myself. I haven't been to school for meteorology. And, you know, when you spend so much time, and Tyler will understand this, babysitting a lot of people on the forums, you learn a lot about the weather. And I tended my craft, if you will, and kept on researching, especially since, you know, I was based in the plains in the Midwest. My focus was a lot on the severe weather aspects, granted, and then it, you know, went into the winter storms, and every once in a while we'd have to go into tropical situations and long-range forecasting. And then in 2011, Joe Vistardi, the great JB, made a claim that monster storms in the Bering Sea during these 2 years, analog years, that he was using. 3 weeks later, monster storms in the Ohio Valley happened. And at the time, I was also researching the LIHZAK reoccurring cycle, or the LRC. And the premise basically in that forecasting method is that the weather cycles, what will come start in the cycle in late October or early to late October, will come back multiple times during the year after so many days. Usually it's anywhere from 45 to 60 days. And every year, according to Gary Lezak, who's a meteorologist out of Kansas City, every year those dates change because the weather's never current, you know, in that sense, in that it's constantly changing. And so I sat there and I watched the theory that Gary Lezak was saying, applied it to what Bastardi was saying, and I spent that whole time studying the Bering Sea. And I found that it didn't matter if it was a storm or if it was a high pressure or just a standard run-of-the-mill trough, the weather in the Bering Sea had a direct correlation to the United States between 17 and 21 days later. And after applying that theory in the forums for 2 years, you know, I went to the University of Missouri, Dr. Anthony Lupo, who at the time was the department chair of the Atmospheric and Environmental Sciences Department there at the zoo. And I said, here's my theory. What do you think about it? And it's actually, his Twitter handle is the Block Team. He's done research on 5-bar blocking for years now. He's got multiple papers out there and whatnot. And upon giving him my theory and letting him test it by doing autocorrelations of the PNA and a couple other things, we went full throttle. And we've penned, if you will, two research papers. The first one was for the 39th Climate Prediction Center Diagnostic Workshop in St. Louis. And that was our beginning, if you will, you know, to kind of get it out into the masses. This is how we are looking at the forecast. Because when at KOPN, what I would do is I would give them a long-range forecast every week. And at first, when I did it, I was utilizing the models. And now that we look back at it, we kind of laugh because, you know, I sit there and make fun of the models, especially in the long range, and yet here I was trying to push my own theory to 30 days instead of just 17 to 21. I was trying to get even more of a heads up and pushing it to 30 days by saying 10 days out by looking at the models over the Bering Sea. And I realized that it wasn't working because for the same reason why the models wouldn't get something right in the long range for the continental U.S. And so at that point, we decided instead of utilizing the models, we would only look at the observations.
Okay, so I'm curious, how do these long-range forecasts, how can they be utilized by NOAA and the Climate Prediction Center? I know they do some long-range forecastings now, but how can these types of, you know, the Bering Sea role and the typhoon role, how can they be utilized by the Climate Prediction Center and NOAA?
Oh, yeah. They will give you the Bering Sea. We call it the trifecta because The Bering Sea rule is based on a reoccurring Rossby wave train. And what happens in the Bering Sea is verified by what happens with the typhoon rule, because you can literally follow it. 20 days, you know, you'll get yourself a 20-day heads up by looking at something, at an observation in the Bering Sea. And then roughly 10 days later, you'll look at the typhoon rule application. The typhoon rule states that 6 to 10 days high pressure is in East Asia, it will be in the eastern United States 6 to 10 days later. So that we'll look back at the forecast, which was for the Bering Sea rule, and then apply that going, well, yeah, that's right on point, because, you know, when we look at the typhoon rule, we'll say, well, yeah, 10 days ago, this is what the Bering Sea rule showed. And then you'll, you know, in between then, you'll start seeing hints of the models catching on to, you know?
Yeah.
You know, between 8 and 15 on the models.
And so
it's just awesome to put it that way.
Yeah, so I noticed you're doing some more research on severe weather outbreaks. And I've noticed that there's a lot of this long-term research, research cropping up that is focused on long-term severe weather outbreak forecasts. Why are these, in particular, severe weather long-range forecasts, why are these useful? And what kind of real-life applications can we use these for?
Oh, it goes beyond, severe weather research, because I joke with everyone that say, oh, you're doing a great job, and I kind of pull them to the side, and I tell them, you're not going to thank me when the energy sector gets a hold of it. And they're like, what are you talking about? I said, well, okay, just imagine, if we're able to forecast a heat wave 20 days in advance, what do you think is going to happen to the electric rates?
Gotcha. So it's like an energy type of forecasting thing. Yeah. That's very useful.
Or like say there's a huge cold wave in the winter and we're able to forecast that 20 days in advance. What do you think is going to happen to home oil prices?
Yeah. And what do you think is going to happen to the media?
That too. Exactly. You know, forget about the polar vortex talk. You know, it's going to go beyond this. And severe weather, we're looking at it, focusing it towards the emergency management sector and government sector. In fact, when I was at the 40th Climate Prediction Center in Denver, I actually had a guy, because it was in Denver, and I had a guy from NORAD come up to me and said, hey, you know, I brief various government entities on severe weather and whether they need FEMA involved, National Guard units, and the like. And he said, if you can really get your, you know, get this nailed, this would be huge, because we're going to be using your method to give the government 20 days warning.
Gotcha. So what is some of the future research you're going to do? Where are you kind of narrowing in on in terms of specific research and what you're going to do in the future?
Well, right now we're going to focus on even going farther by looking at the actual reoccurring Rossby wave train, because like our next paper is based on, we were forecasting the return of flooding that happened in St. Louis in the late December period, December 23rd through the 28th, and we were forecasting that it was going to return in March based on the reoccurring Rossby wave train. And that's what happened in the Arklatex, was that it was hitting very hard. The Arklatex got over 20 inches of rain in some areas. The Arklatex, northern Louisiana. You know, I'm pushing even farther, because I kind of joke with a couple of the research team members that I'm making them work even harder.
Yeah.
We've noticed that whenever the SOI is volatile, if it jumps or falls over 10 points, 20 days later, a severe weather event will happen in the U.S. during the summer or in spring, and during the winter, you'll have a major storm hit the eastern United States. And then going beyond that, too, is we're going to develop two new indexes, and one of them is going to be the Northern Hemisphere equivalent to the SOI, or the Southern Oscillation Index.
Oh, okay.
And then the other one is going to be purely based on the Bering Sea rule that we use. And what's going to, the reason why we're doing this is, this research will quantify the typhoon rule and the Bering Sea rule, because we're actually going to have data that we can use.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So where can we find your future research and the research you've already done? Can we find it on the internet anywhere, or should we look at publications? Where should we look?
There's multiple ways. If you do a simple Google search, it's on the Bering Sea Rule, you'll get a ton of hits on our research, and two, we actually have a dedicated forum thread in the AccuWeather forums where we talk about the reoccurring Rossby wave train, the Bering Sea rule, and the typhoon rule, along with a lot of the SOI that I just discussed too. And then also, we have two websites dedicated, I would say. One is my KOPN-FM weather blog. And then the other, which is really the nuts and bolts, if you know, of the research, is run by one of our research members. It's beringseerule.blogspot.com. And that website has all of our maps. It also has all of our data, where if you look, for instance, on the northeast temperature forecast, you can actually see the correlation between our correlation point on St. John's Island in the Bering Sea to the correlation point off of Long Island in the northeast. And you can see the pattern. And one of my favorite sayings. Like, for instance, the heat wave, not really heat, because it's not 3 days concurrent. But the heat that was coming for the northeast was forecasting of the month.
So on your...
Not only that.
You keep going.
Real quick, not only that, but the cool down immediately followed.
So on your website here, the Bering Sea Rule Blogspot, I see a number of tabs with model maps in plots. You run those operationally?
Yes, basically. That's what my research partner, Josh Herman, this is his data and everything. Yes, sir.
Sometimes we talk about our target audience for the show, and so far the answer has not really been an answer. So I suspect that some people that watch or listen to this radio show, I say watch because it's on YouTube, but the show are probably interested in weather, but they don't know a whole lot. So you've brought up heat waves and severe weather as to some of the things that you're able to forecast with this research that you're doing. Can you provide a simple idea of what you look for in the Bering Sea and what happens when you see something. Just very simple, a very simple step-by-step process, so that it becomes less of an abstract topic.
Yes. Before Josh made all of this automated, what I would do is I would look at the Ocean Prediction Center's 500 millibar and SLP observations maps for the Pacific.
So sea level pressure and a map for halfway up through the troposphere.
Exactly. Yep. What was it, about 18,000? 18,
yeah. About 20,000 feet.
Yep. And I would look at that in my mind. In fact, this is why Josh developed we call it an overlay. If you look on the website, you see teleconnection maps. I visualized that map that Josh developed, and I would look at that, and however the SLP or the 500 millibar looked over the Bering Sea, I would, in my mind, picture this teleconnection map, which shows the continental U.S. stretched along the Bering Sea, and say, okay, when I would make my long-range forecast, I would tell my listeners, this is what's going to happen here in central Missouri. We're going to have below normal temperatures during this time period, above normal temperatures, or a storm system would bring rain on this date, and the like. So I would have so many issues, especially when I was at the CPCBW discussions. They're like, that's it? And I'm like, yes, sir. That's all I did. You know, I would look at the 500 millibar charts or the surface low pressure charts, and because of, in my brain, having that picture of the continental U.S. over the Bering Sea, that's how I would make my forecast before we got that automated overlay done.
Fascinating. I have the image pulled up now, and at first glance, I didn't actually notice that you had the Bering Sea overlaid on the United States. But if you are listening and you look up this map, basically it's the United States and then the Bering Sea on top of each other, and then the contours. Where are the contours? Are the contours from the Bering Sea?
No, that's how we stretched out the continental U.S. map. The stars are our correlation points, that if you go to the website and click on one of the tabs, which is either the SW max temp, MW max temp, or Northeast max temp, I requested from Josh that we start with the stars over the Kamchatka Peninsula and correlated to southern Utah. And then there's an island, if I remember right, I think it's a two. I'd have to ask him. And it correlates to the North Carolina-South Carolina border. But the correlation of the central Missouri to Sitka Island in the Bering Sea is for Springfield, Missouri, and the correlation point for southern Utah is our southwest. That's my fault. I'm sorry. It's the Medford, Oregon, is the extra one that I requested to add more data points to it.
So the contours here of 500 millibar geopotential height geographically correspond to which point on the Earth?
Oh, you're actually looking at the OPC maps,
Tyler. I'm looking at the one that says Bering Sea rule with the colors of.
I thought, the Medford, Oregon, which is the one on the farthest left, obviously, is a spot in far eastern Russia. the southern Utah is on the Kamchatka Peninsula, the southern Kamchatka Peninsula. The Chamaya Island correlation point is to Springfield, Missouri. Attu Island is right on the border of South Carolina and North Carolina. And St. John's Island, inside the Bering Sea, because Attu and Chamaya is part of the Aleutian Island chain. St. John's Island is in the middle of nowhere in the Bering Sea, and that's correlated to a point on the farthest point of Long Island.
So, do you think that this has to do with the weather generally moving from west to east, and you
that's the reoccurring Rossby wave,
and you look at the pattern in the Bering Sea, and it takes roughly 17 to 21 days for that same pattern to be placed over the United States, and so that's how you're able to foresee what's coming.
Exactly, yes, sir. And that's why, and then if you look at the map below that, which is the one for the typhoon rule, you can see that we've got that one stretched out so that Seoul, South Korea is roughly Cairo, Illinois.
Very interesting. I will have to look into this on a more frequent basis, because I think you have caught my interest.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've got 3 years of data on the forums. If you get plenty of time and read.
I don't think I've been on in 4 years. That's part of the problem.
You've been really busy.
Yeah, it's funny how I just dropped off with college. But Dakota has a question before we ask what we ask everyone. I believe it involves weather enthusiasts.
Yeah.
Well, I was actually so I was curious. There's this kind of stigma with the name weather enthusiast, and I believe you're the, I don't know if you're the first non-degreed Met that we've had on the show. I think maybe so, but I'm just curious, how do you kind of view that? I mean, it gets kind of a negative portrayal via social media and other ways. How do you kind of view that as a weather enthusiast yourself?
Tyler, could you repeat what he was saying? Because he kind of broke up on me because of our...
Yeah, he said we have not had very many people on our show that do not have an official meteorology degree, and so there is sometimes a negative connotation for weather enthusiasts and perhaps their credibility, and he was wondering how you tackle that.
Oh, I'll be honest. I'm still, I don't know if you look through my KOPN FM Twitter account, but I fight that, constantly. And it's not even just enthusiasts either, Tyler. I mean, look at Michael Ventrice. He's right now developing a severe weather index, and he is just being trashed. And, Dakota, I don't know if you've witnessed this, but there's been a lot of uproar on social media about all of the severe weather indexes that are coming out. And whether you're degreed by, whether you're a doctor in meteorology or if you're just a regular enthusiast, it does not matter. You're going to get scrutinized, and it's sad. And I came back with, when I was being attacked, it was like, look, I found something. Yes, it might not be, quote, anything new, as it was being touted on the Twitter argument, if you will. But the fact is that what I'm using is verifiable and it's legit. I don't see this person, who it was, giving people 3 weeks warning of severe weather or any type of weather for that matter. And I said, until you get to that point where, you know, you can compare a 3 week forecast to mine, just leave me alone. I've got all the verification that I need is that I've had my research papers published, and I've got a peer review paper that's currently in waiting. So we're waiting for the response back from the reviewers. And that's all the verification and kudos that I need. I don't need someone to act like they know it all and trash talk what I do. And it, like I said, it doesn't matter if you're a degree doctorate in meteorology or just a weather enthusiast. This is social media, and it will happen. You'll be trashed.
Yeah, so I haven't seen all of the criticism that you've received or other people have received, but I have seen some of it, and the criticism that I think is valid to an extent, the sharing of different maps and different products. I don't think the criticism of, you know, the procedures and the methods of the research, that is, you know, completely off limits. That's part of the scientific process, and, you know, if it's peer reviewed, that's what the research process is all about. But sometimes I this is not referring to you at all, but I've seen, especially in winter, different types of maps shared that the public gets their hands on.
Oh, okay. I see where you're going with this now. All right. Mm-hmm. And I apologize because, like I said, you know, I just went through that, and I've seen that Michael Ventrese went through that. So I thought that was the angle. I agree in that regard. When it comes to a private meteorologist or a consultant or whatnot that's showing a day 10 European 20-inch snowfall for a specific spot, and then acting like they've got a disclaimer that it wasn't a forecast, that does a disservice.
Yeah. Well, wow. Time really flew by there. We could probably talk for hours about this, but we should probably start to wrap up. JD, thanks so much for joining us, and, you know, hope to have you on sometime soon. Really interesting stuff, and great to hear your perspective on a number of things tonight.
Oh, I appreciate it. You know, one, I actually got to talk to Tyler. I've known him for what now? Tyler?
Yeah.
That's good.
You were just a kid. I hate to put it like that.
You definitely did.
Reuniting over the Weather Junkies. All right, thanks, JD. You can follow us on the WX Junkies on Twitter if you don't already. We're also on Facebook. You can listen to this podcast on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, and iTunes. And if you're on iTunes, give us a rating or a review. We just want to hear from you. Tyler, want to go ahead and tease next week?
Yes, we continue our Thursday evening episodes, and even though we're going into the summer months, we're going to stick with our 8 o'clock schedule next week, and we are very excited to have on the show a meteorologist from WXBug, Mark Ellenwood, to discuss good and bad of storm chasing. And there's been a number of tornadoes in recent days, and every time people chase storms, there is always a bit of a controversy. So it's bound to be a good discussion next week, Thursday at 8 o'clock. Mark Ellenwood talking about storm chasing. Plenty of things to talk about. Dakota, you want to take us out?
go, Julia. We got cows.